2SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture here on 2SER. My name is Sophie. I'll be taking you through the next hour. And boy. Oh, girl, do we have one hell of a show for you today. Blake Howard from Graffiti with Punctuation will be dropping in to chat about Guillermo del Toro's brand new film, Shape of Water, in Gaggle of Geeks. James Newman will also be dialing in. Now, he's an artist for Packed Afterglow, and he's got a brand new work that's about culture and food, two of my favourite things. Also, producer Lakshmi Krishnan will be chatting with Lisa Rehana, a New Zealand artist, about her latest exhibition, Cinemania. And, oh, I'm so excited. Firstly, though, we're going to be chatting with the drag queen of Ireland herself, Aponte Bliss, who is performing right now at Riot at Sydney Festival at the Magic Mirror Spiegel Tent. We're going to be chatting to her next. But to kick things off, here's a tune from Beck. This is Heaven's Ladder. Clearly, that's where we're heading. You're in 2SER.
Look up heaven's ladder, see the angels climb down. With their eyes all full of stars and their heads in the clouds. Oblivious to danger with the failure to keep both feet on the ground. And when the sun sets on you, then you go. When you're shackled to the shadow and the ghost, you could learn to leave your long lost days alone. Answers if they can. 'Cause cheating's better than guessing when the answer is that there's none to be had. And when the sun sets on you, then you go. When you're shackled to the shadow and the ghost, you could learn to leave your long lost days alone. No.
with Heaven's Ladder off Songreader, which is actually a book of sheet music that Beck curated, but they also performed and was available online, and that was back in 2012. You're here on It's So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture.
Let's enjoy new stuff, old stuff, a real variety.
My pleasure.
And yay!
To SER 107.3.
Hold on to your knickers, there is a Right in town and it's going to be wild. Featuring an all-star cast, Right is an Irish variety show that melds high art with trash culture, plus a good dose of partying and politics. Taking residency at the Magic Mirror Spiegel Tent in its Australian premiere at Sydney Festival, it's time to bow down to royalty as we're joined by the Queen of Ireland herself, Panty Bliss. Hello.
Hi.
You're doing a big production here.
Yes.
Riot.
Yeah.
Very big, very out there, very, well, you don't usually get many live variety shows anymore.
Yes. There's a few of these things that we in the business call the Spiegel Tent shows that sort of go around the world. And they all have some aspect of this sort of variety show to them. You know, there'll be acrobats and whatever. And in some ways, this is our show, Riot. It has taken some inspiration from those shows, but it's not quite that because it's made by theater makers. Mm-hmm. So it does feel like a sort of a show that has an idea and all of that. But it looks a bit like a variety show because every 5 minutes it's changing to something totally different. And they brought very disparate performers together. So there's a drag queen, but there are circus performers and acrobats. But there's also live musicians and singers. It's all driven by live music and live singing. So it is kind of hard to describe when people say, "So tell me about the show, right?" You know, I was like, "Oh God," because it's part variety, part circus, part theater. There's a lot of spoken word bits in it too.
Yeah.
So it is a little hard to describe, but it's. It is like a variety act that every 5 minutes it's totally changed. And so 1 minute you're howling laughing at something like ridiculously stupid, like people Irish dancing inside giant ridiculous pink balloons or something.
That sounds fantastic.
It's so much fun. And then the next minute there's a really sort of serious and touching, spoken word thing about abortion. You know, like, it sounds like a
Why
lot.
Not?
You know, but actually, it's just constantly super entertaining. And one of our big inspirations when we were making the show 2 years ago was old school vaudeville shows.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot of research into that. And
mm.
People can have opinions about everything, and maybe if you took your old granny to it, she might hate it or something. I don't know, but even she would not say it was boring.
No,
it is full on, all color, all sound, all the time, constantly changing. Yeah,
sounds like you're keeping the audience on their toes.
Yes, and thankfully, Australian audiences, like other audiences before them, have really taken to it and are loving it. And it's been going gangbusters. So yeah, all good.
Excellent. Well, the show's also quite political in a way.
It is. It's very political, I would say.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes you can go along and, you can almost ignore that because there's so much going on. But there's a strong political thread through it, yeah.
What kind of themes are you touching on politically in it?
Well, about the state of the world today. Now, some of it is because it was based out of Ireland, there are some things that are Irish concerned, but actually translated very well here to Australia.
Yeah.
Because there's some stuff about the Catholic Church, there's some stuff about abortion, there's some stuff about marriage equality and women. There's a lot of stuff to do with women's rights in it and gender issues. But all, I hasten to add, packaged in a super entertainingly stupid and fun way. Those are the kind of the general, it's sort of the state of the world and how we ended up in this mess is kind of what it's about.
Yep.
But the show is actually... super hopeful. It's actually reminding us that actually everybody has the capacity to be just nice, kind people. You know, even if sometimes the internet has fucked that up. So it's kind of reminding you that actually it is possible to change the world.
Yeah.
And actually, because when it was written, it was just not long after Ireland's marriage equality referendum.
Yeah.
So there was a real sort of positive idea, especially among young people, that actually it is possible to make change.
Yeah.
Because young people are very involved in that campaign in Ireland, like here.
Yeah.
And so that's it actually, it struck me as it's kind of fun that it's in Australia here too, because it's the message is very apt. It actually is possible to make change for the good as well as for the bad. as long as you work together and sort of organize all that. So actually, the other day we were doing the show on the first day that people could actually
get married
in Australia.
On that day.
So that was a very fun day.
I mean, you were like one of the prominent faces of the marriage equality movement in Ireland. So
yes, because I'm the pretty one, though.
Of course. But you know, coming here and then we had to go through the plebiscite and everything. Mm.
Well, like, the last few years when I'd be coming here, sometimes we'd be banging my head off the table because it felt, because we had ours 3 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
So sometimes, like, I remember last year, I think at some point, I went home after the show and I was wherever I was staying and I turned on the TV and it's that, you know, that Q&A show or
yes.
whatever it's called. That show was on and they were having a discussion about it. And it was literally like stepping back 18 months of time. They were saying exactly the same arguments, almost word for word. That, you know, the Christian person was saying the exact same thing. And it was just like, oh my God, this is the most depressing thing I've ever... You know, like, it reminded me of pretty much a horrible time.
Was it a time warp for you just doing that?
It was, yeah. Because it was exactly the same debate. And bizarrely, even some of the same voices, because the sort of... The no campaign here brought over some of the Irish no people. I was like, well, they didn't win in Ireland, so yeah, it doesn't seem like the best choice. But it was just like, oh God, I felt for you because it wasn't a fun time, certainly in Ireland during the referendum campaign. Of course, it was all worth it in the end, and now I look back and only see the good things. But during the campaign, it was pretty horrible. Yeah, so.
Mm.
And the same here, I know. So,
well, it's happened.
It's all done.
People are getting married, but you know, last year a lot of terrible things happened.
Yeah, but not directly affected.
Ireland, not affected.
Although I have to say, the other day, on the first day of your real, the gay people could actually get married here.
Yeah,
and they were having an event at Sydney Festival outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a party kind of thing.
Yeah,
and I was going to go and speak at it directly after we finished our own show. But that was the day that the heavens opened and suddenly the wind came out of nowhere and there was thousands of lightning strikes. And I was like, maybe we were wrong all the time. And God, she really does not like this marriage equality idea. Lyle Shelton was right all along.
Oh, never say Lyle Shelton is right. Never say that. Goodness. I find it really interesting that, you know, this show is also about a glimmer of hope despite all the crap that
is
happening. Because your co-residents... The Briefs, the gorgeous Briefs boys.
Yes.
Their message in their show is also a glimmer of hope that's what's to come.
Yeah, because it's because the both shows are being made in a particular time.
Mm.
Like, their show's very different than ours.
Yep.
But it's true that theirs is a reaction to the same things that ours is a reaction to. Theirs is more a protest, as they describe their show. But it's definitely, you can say, they're inspired by this weird time the world is in, and we were inspired by that same weirdness.
Now, going on to your cast, you have an amazing cast, as you mentioned before.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, you've got the Lord of Strutt.
Yes, who are just so entertaining, like, you know, comedy acrobats, and quite well known here in Australia because they always came here to the street performing festivals. They started out as street performers,
and
they're just so brilliantly hilarious and funny. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got Up and Over It, who's taking Irish dancing to a whole new level.
Yes, making Irish dancing gayer than it even was already.
And then I'm really interested about, you've got Ronan Brady, who you stole from the football team.
Yeah, so he used to be like, a well-known footballer in Ireland. And we have Gaelic football. It's a bit like what do you call your one?
A-League?
What do you call your football on the right? Aussie rules,
right, okay.
So, Gaelic football. Aussie rules is kind of like a mix between rugby and Gaelic football or something.
Okay.
So we have our Gaelic football. It's, you know, at home, it's like families live and die by it. Like, it's the passion. And it's done on a county basis. So people, you know, if their county gets anywhere near the finals and you drive to that county, every single shop and home and sheep, literally sheep, are painted in the colors of the county. Like, it's a national obsession. And this guy Ronan Brady, he played for County Roscommon, which is the smallest population county in Ireland, also the oldest population, and it's the only county that voted against marriage equality.
Oh,
now,
wow.
But only by a couple of votes, like by
it
a
happens.
Tiny number, but it happened. So it's just interesting that one. And he was a footballer, all of that, and he had an injury, and he needed to take time out, and he took up acrobatics as a kind of, he thought, the stretching aspects and all that might be good for his injury, and he ended up becoming, you know, a full-time actor. And so he does a lot of the aerial stuff, and he also does brilliantly funny and hilarious strip, which starts out with him in his football
gear.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah. It's really clever and funny, supporting people. Love him. So sometimes after the show, we go out for pictures. Whatever. He's very popular for the pictures.
I can't imagine.
And he has an Irish country charm, you know, like he's white as a sheet. So we had to tell him, you're not allowed to get a tan when you go to Australia because this is part of your charm.
Well, Panty, thank you so much for joining us
today.
Thanks
for having me.
You can catch Riot all the way until the 28th of January in Hyde Park at the Meriton Village Festival at Sydney Festival. Put all those details up online, as Riot is the times change every day of when they are performing. But we'll put all those details, including how you can get tickets, on at 2SER.com, along with that podcast. You're here on It's So Hot Right Now with me, Sophie Lai. Here's a tune now from Robert Scott featuring the gorgeous sounds of Tiny Ruins, a bit of a New Zealand double whammy. This one's called Now In Your Hands, off his album Greenhouse. 2SER.
Is a proud media partner of Flickrfest, Australia's leading short film festival.
Screening now until January 21, Flickrfest is showing a jam-packed program of the world's most provocative and wildly entertaining short films.
With 100 of the most spectacular short films on offer, don't miss out. Head to flickrfest.com.au for tickets and info.
Flickrfest sponsors 2SER 107.3.
You're on So Hot Right Now with me, Sophie, live. Now, it's time for your pop culture fix on...
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with...
Blake Howard.
And Sophie Live.
Good morning, Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation.
Good morning, Soph. Good morning, geeks. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. What a Saturday it is, because we have barely recovered from the awesomeness that was Guillermo del Toro's Shape of Water.
OMG. Guys, next week you have a treat.
Indeedy. Blake, what is it about?
1960s. Somewhere in America, at a secret government facility, a mute cleaner by the name of Eliza stumbles upon one of the occupants of said government facility an amphibious man, a merman, perhaps. just to get a visual in your mind, a sort of creature from the Black Lagoon mixed with Abe Sapien, because Doug Jones plays Abe Sapien from Hellboy. So
it's such an Abe Sapien vibe.
Yeah, lots of stuff like that. So it's basically you've got a scientist by the name of Michael Sulberg, played by an actor by the name of Michael Sulberg, who's there sort of examining the beast. You've got the beast's keeper, played by Michael Shannon. His name's Strickland. He's sort of this evil, you sort of assume that it's the CIA, but sort of a government lackey, military guy, very weird but great. And he's sort of prodding the beast along, deciding what they're going to do with him. And what you have in secret is this burgeoning relationship between this mute woman and this beast, because she starts to discover that it's not just a hunk of meat that is like a fish, as the brain of Dory. In fact, it's sort of a sentient being, and they develop a connection. And this movie is just a sumptuous, glorious, ravishing, weird, and wonderful love story. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I can't gush highly enough about just the energy and the warmth and the design in every single frame of this movie. The performers are great. Sally Hawkins plays Eliza. She's absolutely outstanding. Doug Jones, always good. Usually, and has like grace and creepiness that makes him perfect behind monsters. Octavia Spencer plays Zelda. She's Eliza's best friend and fellow cleaner, alongside Giles, played by Richard Jenkins, who is her queer neighbor and best friend, who watches old tacky musicals and talks
crazy
about
cat
art.
Man.
He's a crazy cat man.
It's a crazy cat man.
That's the perfect description. He absolutely outstanding. Michael Sulberg, if you haven't seen him, he's in movies like The Post. He's in Call Me By Your Name. He's in Shape of Water. Like, this guy is having a really blooming part of his career. And Michael Shannon is just outstanding in everything. My favorite movie that he's in is probably The Night Before, where he plays like the stoner ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. Which he's just so good in. But that's a joke. He's actually really great in everything. But it's just, look, it's a really incredible fairy tale. Guillermo del Toro famously said that he calls monsters the patron saints of imperfection. And I think that he just loves the idea of monsters as sort of allegories for, you know, human flaws. And that's what this is about. It's really, I don't know, it's just really tender, beautiful, gorgeous love story. And I honestly cannot recommend it higher. I know you saw it, Soph. What did you think?
I thought it was gorgeous. You know, you have this, he always creates these monsters, as you mentioned, like, you know, allegories, but even though he doesn't require CGI a lot of the time to create them. He uses special effects and makeup most of the time, and costuming, and they're so realistic.
Yeah.
The way they interact with the actors, oh my gosh, it's just stunning. And you really can feel like the relationship kind of blossoming through eggs. Who doesn't like eggs?
Who doesn't like eggs?
Who doesn't like
you love
eggs?
It, you love a boiled egg, right?
Yeah. And it's, for me, like Michael Shannon, like his character, the way he reacts to things is so visceral. Like, I was gripping onto the seat every time he raised his voice slightly. He looked at someone creepily.
Sideways, yeah.
Yeah, and I just got that shiver down my back going, oh, God, to work under someone like that.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, like, with Guillermo's films, it makes you feel something. Like, you get heebie-jeebies, but then you just feel the enormous warmth and love when you see these characters come together. And even the people are like, oh, fish sex, weird.
Look, spoilers. This is about
this has
a relationship.
Been going around on Twitter
this
for a while.
Has been going around on Twitter for a long time. There is intimacy, and it's not like some kind of tentacle porn. It's not. That's not what this is. Even though there's a really fantastic Mexican film that came out last year, excuse me, called The Untamed, where there is kind of some tentacle porn. But this does not have tentacle porn, no. But
it is a very sweet relationship, and you're for it, even though it's an interspecies relationship.
Like, the way I describe it is, like, Eliza and Giles, they live above a movie theater. And so you would imagine that they live in this sort of beautiful Gothic style, old building, wooden floors, and literally there's a couple of scenes where the camera pans down through the floors in Eliza's apartment down into a, like a movie theater. And she works night shift at this government facility. And so, you've constantly got the reels of the movies humming and the movie there and the energy of anyone in the crowd. And I just honestly think that that's almost like a window into Guillermo del Toro's brain, inside his head, underneath the sort of aesthetic in the outside, is this deep subconscious where, like, classical film reels are just constantly running through his head. So
all the big epics.
all the big epics and all the small, dainty, beautiful, romantic films, all those big, broad, gorgeous Hollywood canvases are in his head. So when this movie's made, it's telling sort of a sweet and intimate story. It's telling something that's a very much an escapist fantasy for the time that it's set, because it's set in the 60s, and you actually hear like one radio grab where it's like Kennedy talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis and a blockade that's about to happen. So you kind of get like a brief window, but that's not what this movie's about. It's about finding connection. It's about being seen. It's finding connection in the weirdest and most wonderful and unexpected places. And so, yeah, look, it's a massive, massive recommend for me. I think it's up there with some of his best stuff. Pan's Labyrinth is, I think, peerless. I think that's his best work by far.
Mm-hmm.
This would be right up there. So
yeah.
Pan's. It's really strong. You got see it on a big screen. It deserves it. It costs, I know this might sound like a lot of money, but a normal, I'm just trying to think.
Normal okay. fantasy movie. Or
you're talking, let's say a Star Wars movie, like at least $250 million at this point.
Standard.
A little movie that Robert Downey Jr. made a couple of years ago, like which they said was like a last of one of those small studio movies, was $40 million.
Right? I love that little.
A little movie, yeah. $40 million. Had some great actors in it. No CGI. It's just a family drama.
Yeah.
This movie was made for $12 million, which is like only about like a Game of Thrones episode is made for $100 million. Like, so you're looking at something that is just unfathomably beautiful, made on no budget, and made just with such heart and soul. So that's just another little factor. So get out there and see it. It's a huge geeky movie, and I'm assuming that a lot of geeks will have a huge following with it. And I think if you it's spaz to do this so early, but you start thinking about what's my, after you do your top 10 list of the last year, and I've already heard people and seen people on social media say, it's going to be really hard for a movie to affect me like this has. So get along.
Well, Blake, that's all we have time for, but if you want to hear us yak on further, head to us, look us up on 2SER Gaggle of Geeks on Apple Podcasting, because that's where we are.
Yes, guys, jump on. And please rate and review and listen to us talk for more than our prerequisite sort of 11 or 12 minutes and sometimes 15 when I'm yammering too much.
You can hear us yammer for like half an hour.
It's like half an hour, yeah.
Just nonstop.
And look, if you do want to hear a show finish really angrily, we've got the first episode for you.
Woo! But, Blake, catch you next week.
See you, sir. See you, guys. Bye.
Bye. You can read all of Blake's reviews on Graffiti with Punctuation, or you can follow him on Twitter at BlakeIsBatman for more geeky conversations. Join at any time and tag us too at 2SER. You're listening to So Hot right now here on 107.3, and coming up, we're going to be chatting with artist James Nguyen about his brand new show that's happening at PACT. But to get you there, here's one from Twin Peaks. This one's called I Found a New Way.
Okay, it's Saturday and it's Sydney Festival time. It's Wesley Enoch here, the artistic director. Now, my recommendation for today is check out a fantastic marionette show called the Daisy Theatre. It's at the Seymour Centre there in Chippendale. And you can just check it out. An amazing artist from Canada called Ronnie Burkett. He's a master puppeteer and he does this incredible semi-improvised work with marionettes. It's one of those amazing shows that when I saw it overseas, I said, this must come to Sydney. Sydney's going to love this. Another show I can't recommend highly enough is Lady Rizzo with her cabaret Red, White and Indigo. She's written this cabaret about being a woman in Trump's America. And if you like, it's as funny and as sad and as moving as you could imagine being a woman in Trump's America can be. But check out all the details, sydneyfestival.org.au.
You're on So Hot Right Now with me, Sophie Elijah. Just there you heard from Twin Peaks with A Found a New Way.
It's not just about people in barrels, so shut up.
What the hell?
Plenty of interesting banter to offer up right here on 2SER.
PACT is back with its first Afterglow production for 2018 on the border of things. Creator and artist James Nguyen navigates us through the journey of food production and how it connects consumers on a global scale. Some would say it's food for thought, and James joins us now. Good morning, James.
Hi, Sophie. Morning.
Morning. Now, what inspired this journey into food?
Basically, I put in a proposal for PACT because I just wanted to reconnect with my uncle, who basically was estranged from us for maybe about 20 years. And because he worked as a fruit picker in kind of like country Victoria and New South Wales, it kind of evolved into this thing that was kind of about food and kind of about reconnecting with family. That's basically it.
I mean, this is a 3-year development. That's quite a long journey.
Like, it's pretty unique because, like, most artworks and, I guess, residencies and opportunities are very high turnover. So with this, it's been a privilege to kind of, like, sit on it and kind of, like, develop this slowly. And also because the thing is that reconnecting with my uncle, who I haven't seen in a long time, it probably needed something that was much longer. If it was kind of like a 1-month residency, like it wouldn't have worked.
No, that makes sense. But what kind of foods or cuisines have the greatest backstories for you, and what can you discover what kind of inspired this show in a way?
But basically it's just the romanticism and I guess mythologies that we have of other people. So because I haven't seen my uncle since I was a little kid in Vietnam, I always assumed that he was this kind of amazing heroic character for not following the usual kind of migrant path and just, you know, going into the country to, you know, pick grapes and work on orchards and stuff. But working on it over time, lots of really interesting things about food came up and about a relationship as well.
In what way was he like kind of different to the usual way for people who aren't familiar with that?
I guess like because he tried to get to Australia by boat and failed, so my parents actually spent a lot of money and time to get him over here. And I guess because of that amount of money and resource going into one person, taking them over, there was like really high expectations, both from, I guess, my parents and also from society that, you know, when you're given this opportunity, you make the most of it. And for a lot of immigrants, like to be a good citizen, you educate yourself, you learn English, you basically assimilate into the culture, and then you improve yourself and go to university and, you know, get a proper job rather than
I know that. That runs in my family too.
So it's this whole pressure of, you know, having to prove yourself to be a worthy citizen. And not enough value is placed on, you know, like the work that it's not, you know, academic, or it's not, you know, like white collar. Yeah, because like without people who work in the food industries, and without people's labor in all these industries, like Australia would be, you know, struggling, I guess.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And on this 3-year journey, what kind of surprised you, like in terms of the mythologies behind modern food production?
For me, the thing that jumps out most is that like people are now obsessed with kind of like the quality and the provenance of their food. So, you know, they want to know exactly where the wine comes from, or, you know, where the fish was caught, and, you know, what the fish's name was. But at the end of the day, like, no one ever talks about kind of like the labor that goes into the actual making of that, and how much people are paid for that labor.
Mm-hmm.
And also the other thing is that no one talks about how much the waiter that brings that food to you gets paid. You know, like, are they getting award wages on the weekends, or, you know, like, how they being compensated correctly? So, so these things kind of, like, emerged as I hung out with my uncle, and, you know, I just became a little bit more aware of it, and I guess I was one of those people who thought, you know, like, I was really into my food, but I'm like, I really have no idea. And the other really interesting thing is that, like, going on, like, visits to farms and stuff, like, you realize how much, like, chemicals and things like that are kind of, like, built into our food production, and it's kind of unavoidable. Like, when I was in Vietnam, like, they use a lot of pesticides and herbicides, and I was kind of shocked. But then when I came back to Australia, I realized they use quite a lot as well. Like, it's much more, I guess, controlled, monitored, and managed. But, there is a lot of chemicals and things that get put into our food systems. It is kind of crazy. Like, all the glyphosates that end up being part of, I don't know, like, all the veggies that we eat. Like, it's kind of something we might need to think about. Because, I mean, like, if you have your own garden, like, if you have the privilege of having enough land to grow your own veggies, like, you know how hard it is. Like,
oh my gosh,
everything that comes out gets eaten by, like, cockatoos or, you know, like, caterpillars and stuff. And so you've got this...
Can't even keep them alive.
Absolutely. So, like, the abundance of food comes from this, you know, a highly industrialized process, I guess. And I guess we don't really appreciate what we have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For audiences going to your show, do you think it will kind of change the eating experience for them?
I don't think so. Like, this is just the kind of like the first part of the project. And so the show that I'm trying to set up now is basically just to give a little bit of background and kind of like a context to the relationship between me and my uncle. And I think more of these things would emerge a little bit later on. But yeah, like, it's kind of like, I'm trying not to like beat people over the head with with guilt, because that's not fun. I never enjoy that.
No. So yeah, you mentioned the first part is going to be at PACT, but the second part you're going to debut at the Next Wave Festival. How much of a gap is it between the two parts?
Luckily, it was a couple of months.
So people don't have to go too far to get their answer.
So it's in May, and I'm still like working it out. It's not like I have this, you know, like, amazing plan.
Coming to the actual show aspect itself, it blends video and live performance. So how do you kind of capture your journey into video and live performance in this way?
Yeah, like, generally, like, people use, like, when people use video in performance, they kind of, like, integrate it. But I felt that maybe it's a little bit too complex, especially with, like, like the language issues between my uncle and I. So I thought for this, I'm just going to keep it as simple and straightforward as possible, just so that it's not too confusing. And then once people get a context and a feel of kind of like my uncle and my, like our relationship, then I open up the space and then people see the installation and then they have time to kind of like formulate their own reading and experience, I guess. Because I sometimes, like in a lot of work, like I feel really overwhelmed. So I thought maybe with this one I'll take kind of like the opportunity to keep it as, you know, simple, straightforward as possible.
Yeah. You mentioned the language barrier. Now, this show is actually both in English and Vietnamese. How did you kind of balance that out? So for people who don't know Viet at all.
Yeah, like it was kind of, like working with PACT, like it was a lot of problems because that's why I guess I was thinking about keeping it really simple. Like I start off with a monologue in English and then, you know, like, I'm going to do direct translation of my uncle's perspectives, like in and stories in the videos. But eventually, it'll become a little bit more complex. But I think for kind of like the context part of it, I think it's pretty important just to be as direct as possible. That's kind of like what I got out of the development process through PACT. At the start, I was trying to like make it really poetic and, you know, it's just, it turns to shit.
Well, you don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, so I think sometimes it's just nice to be kind of like direct and generous to the public and then give them space to think and process it. I think that's a nicer approach rather than like discombobulate people.
I think it's a great approach. But James, thank you so much for chatting to us this morning. Can't wait to see the show.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Sophie, for having a chat.
Have a great weekend.
Bye.
That was James Nguyen with his new show, On the Border of Things. It's showing at the PAX Centre in Erskineville from Wednesday till Saturday. That's January 17 to the 20th, if you prefer numbers in your diary. Details are up on 2SER.com along with this podcast, and we'll also give you details on the PAX site. We're going to jump back into the music now. Here's a tune from Broncho. This one's called It's On.
time has gone down to the wire. Only one try in it. The ball's at the back of the net in extra time. They've won.
If you have a passion for sport, learn how to put that passion into winning action and gain a degree into the growing world of sports media and sports journalism. To give that winning career a start, join the team that gets results in sport at UTS next semester. Apply to UTS School of Communication, the number one young uni. UTS School of Communication, sponsors of 2SER.
You're listening to So Hot right now, your weekly dose of arts and culture.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
New Zealand artist Lisa Raihana is conducting her first ever Australian survey that re-examines Maori identity, the fabrication of Indigenous history, and the undermining the colonial gaze as we know it, in her new exhibition, Cinemania, now showing at the Campbell Arts Centre as part of Sydney Festival. Producer Lakshmi Krishnan caught up with Lisa earlier in the week.
Lisa Raihana, congratulations is in order because you've just received the New Zealand Order of Merit.
I have, yes.
And you just wrapped up the Venice Biennial. How's the experience?
It was amazing. And just to represent your country is quite an honour. But to be around so many other incredible artists was fantastic. And there was a lovely correlation between Australia and New Zealand for 2017 in that two Indigenous women were representing their countries, because there was Tracy Moffat and myself. It was really wonderful. We combined a couple of events just to, as a kind of collegial thing. But
it was also a premiere to one of your better-known work, Pursuit of Venus Infected.
Yeah.
Can you explain what that piece is about? Because it's incredibly conflicting on a very, like, epic digital art scale.
Sure. Well, it was inspired by coming here to Australia. I went to the National Gallery in Canberra and saw Les Sauvages de la Mer Pacifique, which is a French scenic wallpaper made in 1805 by Dufour, an entrepreneur. And what he did is he was looking at the popular illustrations done by artists on board Endeavour, such as Parkinson and Weber, and then created this kind of concoction, a utopian enlightenment ideal of what Pacific people looked like. When I saw the work, I couldn't recognise the Pacific people at all, because they looked very Grecian or neoclassical in their clothing. So what I've done is taken that wallpaper to create a background or a platform from which real Pacific bodies and Maori and first Australian people can speak back to that moment in time, but also to complicate it by bringing in those famous historic figures such as Captain Cook and Banks, and also the Marines and the various people who were on board, to look at those moments of first contact, because there's nothing like seeing something performed by real living, breathing people to come to another understanding about history, as opposed to reading
absolutely.
About it. Yeah,
you've drawn out a much darker element of this time in history. It's interesting because you've put such a beautiful kind of range of native ceremonial ritualistic dances and performances matched with execution scenes and torture scenes, and I think it's really conflicting. Your work really draws out level of hypersensitivity for audiences. Give us an oral tour.
There's quite a number of works on the show, and certainly notions of representation, not just for Indigenous people, but from a gender perspective as well. And being a woman, I mean, I tend to fall towards those kind of female works. So there's a gorgeous work, a room installation called Pelt, where there's these beautiful kind of humanimal figures, and they're white women. I wanted to resist this idea that I'm always working with Indigenous politics. I am actually really interested in gender politics as well. I was commissioned to do these nude portraits, and I found that a very difficult proposition. I wanted to resist what I thought the commissioner wanted. I figured he would want beautiful brown bodies with tattoos all over them. So I instead did these perfect white bodies without any tattoos, but kind of taking them into realms where they seemed to have their own power. The colour of sin, where a piece of my writing is being recorded and played with as a soundtrack. But I was always fascinated by, my mother had a Rolta hairdryer, and I love that notion of, like, beauty and And in fact, thinking about these simple beauty techniques that women had in the 70s, compared to now, people are cutting themselves and refiguring themselves in quite different manner. So it's got this kind of retro look. But I also was very aware of when you go into art galleries as an artist that my work might, the sound would bleed out into other people's works and colour the experience for an audience. So I wanted to create these sound domes where you could sit in there and just kind of be encased and enveloped by a sound of women maybe talking about an affair she's had. It's kind of like gossip. So there's some magazines that you can flick through, and I always laugh that idea if I'm new idea or no idea, and how you have these kind of grimy magazines when you go into doctor's surgeries.
And you've also got little snippets and bits of digital video art, which you have an amazing history with.
I think because my father, he left his tribal homelands in the far north of North Island in New Zealand, and so I'm kind of like the first urban. I'm a city kid, and I always felt very sad that I lost access to language. But then by doing that shift into the city, I could gain that opportunity of, you know, really good education and access to TV. And I was always staying up watching TV. I'm really glued to visuals and kind of reading imagery quite deeply. I put myself through art school by also working in an animation paint firm. I loved seeing working with the camera and seeing when we were putting these animations together and creating worlds. I'm really interested in technology, but I think it's just a tool. I really want to have a good reason to take that resource. If I'm asking people for their time, I really want to have some kind of politic that kind of holds it all together, that makes it worthwhile. And then you get these two great things working hand in hand.
This exhibition, it's 3 decades worth of work. Your art must have transformed. What was that process?
I think just experimenting. I mean, I think as I've got older and just become much more masterful with my knowledge, being able to attempt much more complex work. You know, so, I don't know, it's just kind of, I like to transgress boundaries respectfully. I'm really interested in beauty as well as a political device. I mean, there is a lot of beauty in here, and then you can sort of slyly beguile people and then also show these other tough things. So, just to let people open themselves up to these other storytelling devices.
Lisa, it's been very, very lovely talking to you. Your exhibition is incredibly humbling.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for talking to us.
That was Lakshmi Krishnan speaking with multimedia artist Lisa Rehana about her solo exhibition, Cinemania, now exhibiting, at the Campbelltown Arts Centre. And it's part of Sydney Festival, but it will continue on and keep exhibiting until the 29th of March. You're here on So Hot right now. I'm going to play you some more music just to get you through to the last, till we get to Gons as he sets up for Dubbers in the air. I can see him moving his booty. He is ready to roll. But he's a bit of Kendrick Lamar with Love featuring Zachary.
Down. Love and lust. Down. All of us.
Give me a run for my money. There is nobody, no one that'll run me.
Another world!
So give me a run for my money. Sipping bubbly, feeling lovely. Living lovely. She's lovely.
I wanna be with you. 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 I wanna be with you.
Love me, just love me.
If I didn't ride blade on curve, would you still
love me?
If I'm in my mind at work, would you still
love me?
Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to
love me.
Keep it a whole 100, don't got you, I got nothing. Hey, I got something.
I got something.
Hold up. We gon' function.
No assumptions.
Feeling like Tyson with it. Knock it out twice, I'm with it. Only for the night, I'm kidding. Only for life, yeah, only for life, yeah, only for life, let's get it. Hit that shoulder lean, I know what's coming over me. Backstroke overseas, I know what you need. Already on dinner, money come in. All feeling go out, this feeling don't drought. This party won't end. If I didn't
been right, but they don't care what you still. If I'm in my mind, that word would you still. Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to. Keep it a whole 100, don't got you, I got nothing.
I run for my money. There is nobody, no one that'll run me. So give me a run for my money. Sipping bubbly, feeling lovely. Living lovely. Just love me.
I wanna be with you. I wanna be with you. I'm on the way, we ain't got no time to waste. Poppin' your gum on the way, am I in the way? I don't want pressure you none, I want your blessing today. Oh by the way, open the door by the way. Tell you that I'm on the way, I'm on the way. I know connection is vague, pick up the phone for me babe. Damn it we jamming, that had a two for your nanny. Curving your hip from your mammy, remember Gardena. I took the studio camera, I know Top will be mad at me. I had to do it, I want your body, your music. How about the big one to prove it? Look what you made, told you that I'm on the way. I'm like an exit away, yep. If I didn't ride blade on curve, would you still? If I'm in my mind at work, would you still? Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to. Keep it a whole 100, don't got you, I got nothing.
I run for my money. There is nobody, no one that'll run me. So give me a run for my money. Sipping bubbly, feeling lovely. Living lovely.
Hi everyone, I'm Bronwyn Kidd. I'm the director of Flickerfest, and here we are on our first bumper Saturday of Flickerfest. We've got three incredible programs for you today: Best of International and two programs of Best of Australian Shorts. Within the international program, my personal favourite, 5x5, starring Idris Elba, set in the bustling metropolis of London. It's a little bit of a thriller. Within the Australian program, we have some incredible films. Halvesies, a look at a brother and a sister and their relationship through text messages. And When the Light Gets In, about a single mother living on the fringes of society who wakes up with a unique problem. She is surrounded and beaming light. Quite a beautiful and quirky family film. Australian program 2 on Saturday, Under the Stars at 8:45 p.m. We have the wonderful Let's See How Fast This Baby Will Go, about a girl